I am Jennifer Freeland. I am 43 years old. Here on October 13th, it's Friday, at the Bailey House Museum with my father.
Bert Freeland. My age is 83, and today is Friday the 13th of October.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Dad, one of the questions that I wanted you to tell me about is the story behind your name.
Well, we have documents. My cousin, that's deceased now, went to England to all the churches, and he found where the Freeland family started in Cobham, England. In the registry in one of the churches in England had the John Freeland registered in 1768. That's about as far back as we went on the Caucasian side, on the Hawaiian side. You know, the Hawaiians were changed their name. If they were fishermen and they didn't have good luck that year, they'd change their name. So you can't go too far. What else?
What about Grandpa? Because I know that you have the same name.
My grandfather's name was George Freeland, son of John Freeland. He came to Hawaii through Canada. And when he came here, during the, I believe it was a monarchy, mm-hmm. that time, he became the territorial magistrate. He was a 33 degree Mason. He hosted Congress at the Pioneer Hotel, which he built when they came here to check out Haleakala to see if it should be a national park. I didn't bring the pictures of them, the congressman there at the hotel. But we have it. What else? So, my father was a good swimmer with Johnny Weissmuller and Buster Crabbe, and they were going to swim for the United States Olympics. So, at that time, St. Louis was called St. Louis College. And they sent all three of them to Tahiti to learn the Tahitian breaststroke and the back paddle and all that. And Johnny Weissmuller and Buster Crabbe left after their training. My father stayed on, and my brother Steve and I were born there. We left Tahiti when I was 5 years old. So in 1944, we came to California on a Norwegian freighter. It was during the war, so I never forget. There wasn't much to eat except canned asparagus every day. And halfway across the Pacific, a German submarine came up next to us and tied up. And the captain of the submarine, I remember, came up on the ship and had lunch with the captain of our ship. I'm glad they saw the Norwegian flag before they sank us. But after that, they left us alone, and we continued to California.
And then how did you end up here, Dad?
My father was born in Lahaina. His father was George Freeland, who built the Pioneer Hotel. And my father wanted to come back here. I was in the military for 6 years when they called me and said my father was dying of cancer and I should come back. So I came back to Hawaii and to Maui, and my father was at the hospital. In those days, the county of Maui owned the hospital. And the nearest place, I didn't expect to stay because I worked at a mortuary in California. So I looked, and lucky me, Bulgo's mortuary was right through the trash, the, what do you call that, rubbish pile. I could walk from the mortuary to the hospital to see him. And after he died, the mortuary says, why don't you just stay here and run the place? Well, I had to call California and tell him I wasn't coming back. And I stayed there. I buried two people in my wife's family. And they would come in, make arrangements, be there for the funeral, and after that, come and pay the bill. And seeing me so much, my mother-in-law says, why don't you come over for dinner? Of course, she was an excellent cook. And I beat eating canned goods at the mortuary, so I said, okay, at least it did pick me up. But started eating and got to be friendly with them, and next thing you know, my wife and I got engaged, and we got married, and Jennifer is the last of the daughters. And after that, I picked up the son of the owners, Joe Bogo, who was a councilman, and Sonny Estrella, both owned the mortuary. They were brother-in-laws. And when Jackie Estrella got killed in a car accident, I came home and told my wife, I said, I'm unemployed. She said, what do you mean? I said, they're going to close the mortuary. The whole reason for them working was to turn everything over to John Estrella. So sure enough, promptly after the funeral, we were shutting down. But no problem, it just so happened Dr. Baker, who owned the Pacific Cancer Center at the hospital, he was the brother-in-law of Mark Ballard, who was in Kentucky, had a mortuary there. And Dr. Baker used to come out of his little temporary office, which was right out the back of the morgue at the hospital at that time. And he asked me if I could ever design the mortuary. He said, oh yeah, I can. He said, can you make me a drawing and bring it in? So I went home that night and drew it. He looked at it, he said, oh, this looks very good. He said, could you build me a scale model? I said, are you gonna pay for the supplies? I gotta buy balsa wood and knives and glue and all that stuff, but I built the whole mortuary without the roof so you could see it. He packed it up and shipped it to Mark Ballard, who didn't know anything about what was going on. It was Dr. Baker that did everything. So when Mark Ballard showed up, the place was ready for the grand opening. He had no part in building it. So when it opened, well, I was hired right away, even before they even had groundbreaking. So I became the vice president of the place. And at that time, we had the mortuary in Hilo, and Norman's. And cemeteries and crematories and stuff like that. The place just got bigger and bigger fast. And during that whole time, I had businesses of my own. I was contracted to the Maui Police Department for 37 years as the assistant to the medical examiner and also to do all the mortuary transportation for them. And contracted to Clinical Labs of Hawaii to assist with the autopsies. I already had training in that when I was in the Navy from the Navy Hospital in Great Lakes, Illinois. I was sent to the Navy Hospital in Memphis, Tennessee, where I was trained by Dr. Jerry Feinberg, who, after I got there, resigned his commission to take up medical examiner of Shelby County. The first case he did an autopsy on when he switched to county coroner was Elvis Presley's autopsy. And the day I arrived in Memphis, I was stuck in a huge traffic jam. It took like 2 hours endless cars going by, hearse and about 12 flower cars, you know, those flower cars they had those days. And I said, who is this? And they said, Elvis Presley's mother. Didn't know. I mean, from Hawaii, I didn't know who Elvis was. So that's how I got involved with the Elvis Presley side of the story. But after I left there, I went to Pearl Harbor Sub Base for secret clearance. I was there for a year till I got my clearance. And from there, they sent me to Japan with the Navy Security Group activities. I couldn't talk about the bases, except they don't exist anymore. When President Kennedy was in, we switched from land-based security bases to satellites. So it shut down every security base we had all over the world. We had some on top of little mountains with 15 people on them, and I used to have to climb those mountains and do health checks on them, because I was a medic, and give them money. And I said, what do you guys use money for? And he said, look through the binoculars on that mountain. And I looked over there, and there's a monastery up there. And I said, so what? And they said, Japanese love to hike, and there's plenty of girls go up there. So we go up there with our money and spend a night at the monastery, pay the monks, drink sake, and get entertained by the women over there. But they lived in shipping containers on top of this mountain. It was very, very secret. They could pull up and leave overnight. That's what we did where I was. Every base I was ever in the Navy doesn't exist anymore. They closed every one of them. Even the Navy Hospital in Memphis had over 1,000 beds. That's gone too now. I think they merged, they built a smaller hospital at the Navy Air Base, which was close to us. But besides having my own businesses, like I said, I had a wedding business. I rented hearses. I had seven cars. More than we had parked on the side of the house, in our neighbor's garage. The people on my street that didn't drive anymore, I'd rent their garage. We had limousines and hearses all over the creation. But I got to see how Maui was still in the back burner on everything. The people in Hana had no use for funeral homes. They took care of everything themselves. So when we finally started going out to Hana, I couldn't force them to do anything. Like today, you see the mortuary say, would you leave the room while we take the body out of the bed? Well, you can't do that because it's not your house. It's their house. They can be offered the opportunity to leave, but most of them won't leave. And in Hana, I'd sit there and talk to the family, and the boys would put the body in the hearse themselves. Never touched the body until I got back here. So one day, to show you how they really had no use for mortuaries, I got a call to go to Hana. Charles Lindbergh died. So I drove to Hana, and he lived in Kipahulu next to Sam Pryor, who owned Pan Am. Sam Pryor owned all that land. He gave Charles Lindbergh and his wife a chunk of land where they had their house. So when I got there, I said, where's the body? And they said, he's buried. And I said, buried? Yeah, I said, who did that? He said, the farm boys, they built the casket, dug the hole and buried him. I said, well, what'd you call me here for? They said, sign his death certificate and go file it. So I drove 2.5 hours back over here Never saw him. He was already in the ground by the time I got there. And later, I went back again for Sam Pryor. Like I said, he owned Pan Am. He had the world's largest private collection of monkeys in Kipahulu, with cages, those big mango trees out there. The cages were so big, those were in the cage. And monkeys just on the loose in there. And they had a trail between the cages on both sides, and the farmhands used to drive a Cushman through there and throw bunches of bananas and whatever in there to the cages to feed them. But there was lots of them. Sam Pryor, I made the funeral arrangements there at the house. I didn't even go to the mortuary. They picked the casket from a picture, and I shipped him to New York. But Sam's son, Tap Pryor, owns Sea Life Park. So there's a lot of connections all over the place. And what else was there? Then during 9/11, because I was already on the FBI's list of qualified people, I was taken from my home. I couldn't even tell my wife where I was going. The police took me straight to the airport, and I boarded a plane. I was mowing the lawn, so I didn't have clean clothes on. And I flew all the way to New York, and I had to call my wife, send me clothes. But did the dental identification there, not just for the Twin Towers, but for the Pentagon. And another plane crash, it had nothing to do with 9/11, but it crashed in LaGuardia. And they still had tons of teeth and mandibles that they didn't process yet. So I had an overload of, I worked all night long till the next day, the whole 15 days I was there, because the teeth and jaws and things were coming down these conveyor belts, and I had to get them all ready and match ID cards to get them x-rayed and ready for DNA or whatever they had to do, charting. But after that, that was 2,977 bodies. Mm-hmm. After that, I thought it was time to pull the plug. So when I came back, I started getting out of the businesses I owned and the people I worked for. I even was assistant manager of hotels at the same time with all this. I slept for 2.5 hours every night. I was either at a hotel or in the mortuary the whole time. But lucky for me, all that work, I was able to put my girls through college. And that was my main goal.
Yeah. I just remember there's just so many stories that we would need a long time to go through all of them.
It'd take days and days.
But a question that I had asked you a while back, and I'm curious if your answer is that how would you like to be remembered, Dad?
Mainly by my kids, that I did all that I could do for them. I'm sorry I wasn't there as much as I could have been, but I had to work. I didn't have no scholarships I paid everything out of my pocket. So, of course, my wife was very smart too. She ran the office. When I was in New York, she'd dispatch people to go pick up the body. While I was in New York, she ran the whole thing, plus our wedding business. She baked the cakes and scheduled all the thing. I mean, we had people coming from Japan to get married here, so. She did a lot of things. Plus, was taught by her mother. She was an excellent cook. So, and then, wouldn't you know, it didn't rub off on my daughters. They don't like to cook.
When I asked you if we could do this you know, to talk and ask these questions, you were like, why do you want to ask me these questions, and what do you want to know? And a big reason, Dad, is because growing up, you're right, you worked a whole lot, but I remember that you would always say, like, working for the community and all that you did for the community and caring for loved ones that passed, you were always like, you treated them like your own family. When you had to go into homes to pick up bodies and you know, their loved ones, and it's wherever we would go, whenever we would go out, people always stopped and recognized you. And when they found out I was your daughter, they're like, oh my God, your dad. And as I grew up, I realized, like, the dedication that you had to all of the jobs that you had. It wasn't just a job. It was like your heart and your soul, and the people, the connections that you had with people, is because you respected every single person you came in contact with, and you took the time to build their relationships. And
well, when you go in to talk to the families in their house, I always use the Japanese concept. They never talk business right away. You're going to talk about the weather or something. You never talk business right away when you get in. So you talk to them and get them at ease. So I'd spend half an hour talking to them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Then, after hearing Aloha Oe for 15 times, I said, okay, time to go. I was over there one night, I got to Kuali at 3 o'clock in the morning, and the family says, oh, Bruno, can you wait a little bit, auntie coming? I said, okay. So I'm sitting there, and they said, you like one beer? I said, okay. So we're sitting there, and pretty soon I hear chickens crowing, and it's getting daylight outside. I said, where's auntie coming from? They said, Hilo. Hilo? You guys in third gear? Can't be. It's going to take the 2.5 hours to go back. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's the way they are. So relaxed. There was no problem with time with them.
But I know there wasn't any problem with time for you either, and you gave every family their time and their respect. And
well, the police can say, you see, the police department punches a time card. When they call you, they punch the time. When you get to the scene, the officer has to call in and said, I arrived, and they punch it again, because the police contract says you can't take more than 2 hours anywhere on Maui to get the body. So, and I had to pick up bodies on Lanai by helicopter and on Molokai occasionally, especially murders. We don't like to do murders on Molokai because they have nothing there. And you actually have no security of the body because there is no mortuary there. The mortuary people there rent the hospital morgue, and that's where they do the embalming and store the body. But because it's not under lock and key, sometimes you'd go there and there'd be 25 people in there looking at the body, you know, and you can't do that, not with police cases.
Mm-hmm. Well, recently, I'm kind of circling back when you had mentioned about the Pioneer Inn and Grandpa. Now that it's gone, Dad.
Well, the Pioneer Hotel opened for business in 1901 and was the oldest continuous operating hotel in the Pacific. Many famous people stayed there. Congressmen, Jack London, Spencer Tracy, Frank Sinatra, Robert Goulet. In fact, I had to move out of room 8 that was my room at the hotel, because that was Robert Goulet's favorite room. So I had to move out while he was there.
What do you mean that was your room?
I lived in the hotel.
When?
The whole time. My dad had a house over where my medical group is in Lahaina. Well, whereas it burned down. The house was torn down to build my medical group, and it burned down, so there's nothing there now.
So you lived in room 8?
Yeah, because my grandfather had the Pioneer Theater right next to the hotel, just a fire escape separating the hotel from the movie theater. And all my friends used to say, oh, take us to go movie. So we were always in the movie theater.
Well, how old were you when you were staying in the hotel?
17, 18, I got there. Because I joined the Navy the next day after graduation. Lahaina Luna.
That's when you went to the Navy, right?
You graduated from
Lahaina Luna.
In fact, it was the first all-Hawaiian Navy company. Only boys from Hawaii was in this one company and went through training together and everything. And one of our fellow shipmates was Christopher Crozier. His father was a state representative, Fats Crozier. Well, when Fats Crozier died, Chris Crozier became a senator, took his place. And Governor Quinn was the governor then. So he said, you two can use the old Hawaiian bandstand, the one that burned down. They got a new one there now. But Chris Crozier and I was sworn in the Navy in the old bandstand at Iolani Palace.
I didn't know about you staying in the hotel.
Yeah.
I know it was hard for you recently to hear that it's gone. And
well, I haven't been back to Lahaina. I'm just not ready to see what was there yet. When you think over 100 years and that is gone.
Yeah.
I worry about Paia too. It looks exactly like Lahaina, you know. You gotta figure these buildings is over 100 years old and they're just waiting to catch on fire. That's why when they have these grass fires and everything, they make me nervous. Wouldn't take much to get rid of that town too.
So I know that you went into the Navy and I think you were explaining to me that you couldn't speak English very well. Right, you spoke French.
When I was in grammar school, I had a tough time.
And so that's why they, in the Navy, they put you...
I wasn't real sharp still, but I was good at math. I could go up and the nurse instructor would say, how much sterile water do you inject in the sterile vial with a morphine tablet to make 1/4 gram? And you'd have to figure that out. I could do it and half the class couldn't do it, even though my graduating class, and I got a picture of it at home, of all from there, from the medical class, we won top honors in the Navy at that time. We came from a very smart group of guys.
So that's how you ended up working in the morgue in the Navy?
Yeah.
Right?
Well, you know, when the Navy Hospital in Memphis had over 1,000 beds and somebody was dying every day. So it got busy there.
Was that your goal and your dream was to work in?
No, it just evolved. I was a medic and it just evolved. Everybody says, oh, we need help in the morgue. So I went out there. And the instructor there, he was a savage. If you didn't do things right, he'd throw things at you. Trays full of instruments and anything. He was just, everybody was scared to death of that guy.
So even though that wasn't your goal to work in that field though, it's, I mean, I have to say, I think that was your calling, Dad, because
well, in the Navy, when you join, you go in front of psychologists and other people and they grill you. They said, we want you to give us three choices in the Navy, what you want to do. And we guarantee you'll get one of them. So I said, dentist, and what else? Some other thing, and then medical was last. And they said, medical. So that's how I got in there.
Is there any other important story that you want to share?
They're not important to me. I mean, I don't know. I used to take the girls to school, Baldwin, in a limousine, so they could watch TV on the way.
Yes, I remember that. And then I also remember being driven to school in the hearse and being teased a lot. But
the girls used to say, stop the car, we're going to walk the rest
yes,
of the way.
Please they drop me off far
they
away.
They didn't want me driving on the property with anything.
So were you raised in Lahaina?
Mm-mm. Wailuku.
Wailuku, yeah. Yeah, none of my girls was raised in Lahaina. They're all Wailuku girls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm. That's about all. I drew a picture of the freighter with the submarine.
Yeah, I know,
stuff.
You did.
You drew this?
Yeah.
You drew this little picture.
Oh my gosh. So did you have formal art training?
No.
No.
But, I have to see this.
But my dad loves to draw. And so that's why I was like, Dad, I want you to draw just different pieces of your life. And he's like, I wouldn't know where to start. But he... Yeah, he loved
that was
to
in
draw.
1944.
We had paintings growing up. You have paintings that you made that was in the house, too.
Yeah. I have one. It's at Kim's house in the storage room.
Yeah.
You typed this.
Yes.
You have a typewriter?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I lost the...
The first one.
The first
He's
one.
He did.
And when I discovered I couldn't find it,
yeah.
I typed it in the middle of the night. And I didn't even have time to put correction tape in. I said, oh, my God.
Yeah. So he typed again, yes.
I said, you can keep that.
But,
That's so special.
But it was just to, like, little cues.
You type everything, Dad. Yep. You type everything.
Were you nervous to have this discussion?
Nah.
You just wanted to have notes to... coordinate, to organize your thoughts?
I used to put on a medical examiner's convention on Maui where I'd have people come from even Japan.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and you spoke at my school a lot of times.
And I got FBI and Dr. Baden and everybody come and give classes to the people.
Yeah. I'm just wondering the purpose for you typing this.
I write big, and if I wrote it, it'd be six pages instead of one.
So fast, it's great. Yeah. I'm really, really sorry to hear about your Lahaina memories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just look at my vision. When you go in the Pioneer Hotel, here's a big portrait of my grandfather and my dad side by side, and they both went up in smoke together.
Mm-hmm.
It's like dying twice to me. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad neither one of them was around to see the hotel burn because it'd been awful for them.
Yeah. I remember a painting in the bar area. It was like mermaids or sirens. Do you know that painting that I'm talking about?
Mm. Well, there was the only one I really remember was at the Banyan Inn. A sailor stole it, and a Banyan Inn had him tracked down, and the Navy shipped back that painting from, I forget where, but they tracked that painting down. They got hold of that sailor and got that painting back.
Mm-hmm.
It probably burned up too.
We don't know yet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, losing your house is one thing, but the history can never be replaced. That's why I hope they don't bulldoze even the walls made out of a coral block. St. Anthony was built like that. That's where I got married, in the old one. And when they went to build a new one, they bulldozed the whole thing. This one coral block by the bells in the garden. Mm-hmm. One out of the whole church. Mm-hmm. And I'm afraid they'll do that there. I'd make it safe, but leave it there. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, why do you want to go to Lahaina? There's nothing historical to look at, you know.
Sounds like they're doing their best. Mm-hmm. What is the Lahaina Restoration Foundation?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really trying to preserve everything that they possibly can.
Well, I admire Joe Paluda too over there. Mm-hmm. He does a lot. Mm.
Good.
I wished I was a millionaire, I'd help him with some of the things. Mm-hmm. He's been pushing for that hospital, God, I think since I was in high school. Mm-hmm. And now he's trying to build a big fire station in Oluwalu because most of the fires start there.
Yes, always.
Yeah, there's some people that are kind of heroes to me too, you know, that have, and they're not necessarily born and raised here, but Lahaina is part of their soul too. Oh, everybody wants me to write about bodies, peculiar bodies I picked up. No, I can't do that. This island's too small.
That's
everybody,
right.
Everybody put two and two together in a hurry.
It's a really interesting perspective, though, that you have, right?
Yeah.
Being there in those moments.
You have to be sensitive, you
yes.
know? I mean, sometimes I forget that I'm talking to people that's not used to this kind of work, so my daughter told me to shut up.
Mm-hmm.
Don't say that. Mm-hmm. But to me, it's part of my DNA, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, who else could see bodies coming down a conveyor belt and
right.
still be sane, you know? But to me, I'm hardcore. It never bothered me.
Well, I remember you always saying, though, because there are times that I would be scared. You know, because you have the car that comes home and I'm a little scared and I think my friends would make me scared, but you would always say, like, there's nothing to fear. Like, this is, just hope that they were resting in peace. And
her sister used to pick up bodies with me. Mm-hmm. Not with me. If I needed another hearse, she'd come out there. And, like, if I had more than two dead, she'd bring the second car. Then when she got engaged, the boyfriend said, no more. cut that work out.
Do you want to conclude?
Yeah.
Do you feel like it's time?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll let you guys. Do you want to have a closing? Or?
Oh, I thank you, Dad, for sharing your stories. I know there's so much more. But I really wanted to hear just about, like, from the beginning, which I know you've probably told me many, many times, but to just sit, listen, give it all the attention, and to hear the stories. And I didn't know about you staying in the Pioneer Inn, so that was really interesting to hear about. And and thank you, Dad, for all that you've done. You know.
Yeah.
Thank you.